Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of the Talking with Heroes talk show program. I am Bob Calvert, the founder of Talking with Heroes and the host for this evening's program. If you are listening for the very first time, I'd like to just give you a little quick information. You can find out about our almost 10-year history, including about our 5 trips to Iraq and 3 to Afghanistan, going on missions with the troops over a 6-year period. And you can find out about all that, all we're doing in the last year or two also, at talkingwithheroes.com/about. And then for our current programs and current news, we have a news site, thankyouforyourservice.us. And for almost, actually a little over a year now, we have been talking on the air on our regular Thursday night program with members of the R4 Alliance. That's www.r4alliance.org. We've actually helped create audio programs for about 51 organizations that are members of the R4 Alliance. And then just weeks ago, we were at the R4 Alliance National Conference, and we interviewed on video, short video episodes, about 25 of the organizations, mostly veterans. And so anyway, you can find out about the programs that the members we've interviewed so far by going to the talk show page, and there's an article on the left that says, listen to details about 45 R4 Alliance members, partners, veterans, and families and their programs. Also, on our YouTube page, you'll find all the videos from the R4 Alliance National Conference. Well, tonight, we're talking with another member, a new member of the R4 Alliance. I've talked with this gentleman in the past, actually, I think before I even heard of R4 Alliance. His name is Rick Collins. He's a British veteran with 9 years of active duty service, and he is now Executive Director of Veterans 360 and Carry the Challenge. One of his websites is www.veterans360.org. And so I'd like to at this time is thank you for your service, Rick, and welcome to the program.
Yep. Hey, how you doing?
Thank you. And I know you're going to talk a little bit about your service in the British military, but you're going to talk a little bit about in Australia, too, I believe. But why don't you start out, if you don't mind, and just share a little bit about your service?
Yeah, it's really, when it comes down to it, it's really nothing particularly spectacular. Certainly not sort of service that is relatable to, what our young combat veterans go through now. I had a pretty serious back injury and was medically discharged and kind of moved on with my life and have been in the corporate world and self-employed world for many, many years. And 2011, two U.S. Marine friends of mine killed themselves. And both were very young, and both were combat veterans, and both had been civilians for less than a year. And that kind of gave me a new mission in life. So it's kind of like I have another opportunity to serve. And I've been doing it now for 4 years, so I feel like I've kind of re-enlisted and I'm on a different mission, and that's what we're doing now.
So you spent some time basically educating yourself, right, about the challenges that our young combat veterans face, so then you started Veterans 360, so why don't you talk a little bit about that and what you're all offering to our veterans?
Well, yeah, I mean, Vet 360 is, really kind of came about because when I separated from military service, I'm probably no different than a lot of the young vets today. And it was clear to me with the death of my two friends that the support services, the education that they get to prepare them for civilian life was just really inadequate. And then once they separate, the services that are available to them are, hard to navigate, hard to get to. And these young men and women, they just really don't want to be told what to do. They want to get out And then when they get out, they have a very short, window of opportunity to get themselves into the civilian flow of things. And all too many of them don't succeed in that because of the drastic change of their separation from military service, where they have structure and support and, bills are paid and they get three square and they've got their buddies, they know what they're going to do one day to the next, and then all of a sudden they become quote-unquote civilians, and they really have, they have no gunny to tell them, how to get in shape and what to do and how to do things. And so the transition from a structured environment and from military service to one of despondency and frustration is very quick. And when you take into the fact that a lot of our 0311, 11Bs really don't leave the service with a lot of money. And so the process to go from having some money in the bank and having a job and having accommodation to maybe not having any of that is very quick. And when you throw in an unhealthy dose of combat trauma for a large percentage of our infantry types, it doesn't take a genius to realize that they're going to struggle, and they do. And quite frankly, between the government and the military, we just do a pretty lousy job of preparing them and educating them about what they're facing. And as a friend of mine, Dale Dye, said, we don't tell them combat's easy. Why the hell do we tell them that civilian life is? And it's really not, as anybody will tell you, civilian or military.
Absolutely. Tell us what you do. Tell people listening, what is it you offer and where are you offering it to with the services and Vets 360 and Carry the Challenge?
Well, what we've been doing is we've been helping as many individual veterans as we can on a one-to-one basis over the bulk of the last 4 years. And this was until last November. We provided everything from, help with finances to housing to jobs to PTS to treatment, healing modalities, just basic education, everything we could, kind of just shared with them, our experience and those of my network. Around last November, we just decided it wasn't enough. I had a story of a young Army veteran who killed himself in Pennsylvania, who was about a mile and a half away from a VA peer support counselor who is intentionally there to provide that, kind of support. And so we talked amongst ourselves and we basically said, we're going to go big or we're going to go home, because we just can't impact the problem enough one veteran at a time, which, is kind of a buzzword, save a life one at a time, help somebody one at a time. But it's not good enough, because tomorrow we know, and and anybody out there knows, that there is going to be some young veterans who are going to kill themselves tomorrow. And we don't know who they are, and we don't know where they are. But we do know that we can support them. And we do know that there is hundreds of people, maybe thousands of people out there ready to support them if we can get to the point where we can engage them enough to get them to talk about their challenges with not only transition but also post-traumatic stress, for example. So in November, we made that decision to go big. that was when we founded Carry the Challenge, which is as a pretty straightforward mission statement, which is to normalize and civilianize PTS, thereby eliminating the stigma. And, without getting on the soapbox, it doesn't take a genius to work out what that means. Normalize is exactly as it sounds. PTS is a normal reaction to an abnormal situation. It's not something, gets passed down from the family. It's not something you catch from a toilet seat or, it's natural. It's normal. And PTS is, as Ty Carter told me, it's really your body trying to relive the experience as a way to make sure and prevent it from happening again. So this is a fixable issue. The second part of that is civilianize. Excuse me. The media would have everybody believe that veterans own PTSD. They don't. But as long as you keep telling them they do, the stigma is going to stop them and prevent them from putting their hands up and saying, I need some help. Why portray veterans as angry, crazy, alcoholic, substance abuse, idle, whatever terms you want to, you know, put in parcel with PTS when firemen, policemen, victims of domestic violence, children, amputees, victims of car accidents, all these demographics, they also struggle with PTS. But, you know, a veteran does something slightly out of the norm, and the media is just quick to try to label them as, you know, as struggling with PTS, and often that's absolutely not the case. So we have to civilianize this, and that's a big part of our mission that, you know, we can talk about more if you want, but that's a big part of it. They have to understand that what they're going through is normal, and it's no different from a very large portion of society. 6 out of 10 of us will suffer with some kind of trauma in our lives, and we will struggle with it. And if any, you know, the people who are listening, just think to yourselves, you know, when did you see a traumatic event? When were you involved in a traumatic event? And it could be watching the towers come down on 9/11. People lost sleep over that. How many people have been angry about the traumatic event? How many people have maybe gone out and got drunk because they were involved in a traumatic event? These are not military-centric reactions to a traumatic event. They're universal. But we have a very unique society in our military culture where they are told to shut up, suck it up, don't bring it up, don't talk about it, don't be the weak link in the chain, yes sir, no sir, three bags full sir, and they carry that when they go into civilian life. And that is what's hurting these young men and women, because there is no easy way. And if you bring up PTS and you bring up PTSD, and oh, by the way, it is absolutely not a disorder. The clinical term for it is you know, an abnormality. For the term disorder, it's there's nothing abnormal about it. But when they get out and they become civilianized, they carry this kind of macho bullshit with them, and they struggle, and they suck it up because that's what they were told during their military career. And maybe they had somebody who couldn't care less if they were having nightmares or self-medicating or struggling to engage or not talking to the wife or not playing with the kids. Couldn't care less. They want you high and tight. They want you to come to work, and they want you to do your damn job, and they don't want to hear anything else. So when they take that into civilian life, that's a huge problem. And like I said earlier, we have a lot of people, good people out there, who have support services or treatment services, you know, everything from the VA peer support counselors, but, you know, that's a great program. But the problem is that our young veterans don't even register with the VA. Why would they? You know, they see the same news as everybody else. Take 6 months, people are dying at the VA. It's a nightmare to get your benefits done. So, you know, these young, aggressive type veterans can't be bothered. They just don't bother with the VA. So it's up to the community, it's up to society to connect with them. And we've always worked up four key words, which is engage, educate, employ, and heal. If we do one without the other, we fail. If we take somebody and we just do everything we can to heal them and help them cope with their PTS, and we don't get them a job, and we don't engage them, and we don't put money in their bank, they're going to struggle. And just the same as we've proved time and time again, we try to get them into jobs and hire a hero and put veterans to work. But if we do that and we don't address their PTS and their combat trauma, they all too often fail there. The numbers of veterans who fail trying to do secondary education is very high. So we have to do the full 360 degrees. We have to engage them. And it doesn't take a lot to engage them. a lot of good people out there ready to engage them. We have to educate them. And ideally, we have to educate them before they leave military service. We have to be honest with them. We have to tell them what they're walking into. I have had incredibly naive stories from veterans about what they expect and what they plan to do when they become civilians. And bear in mind, Bob, I'm not talking about your pilots. I'm not talking about your officer corps. I'm not talking about your college graduates or your avionics techs or your logistics or your engineers. I'm talking about our infantry types or our truck drivers or our mechanics. So I'm not, you know, we're very focused on that demographic. And you know, the statistics bear them up. What we're doing currently doesn't work. The statistics of our young 0311 types trying to find work and how many are underemployed, how many are unemployed, how many are heading towards homeless shelters, how many are going through veterans courts and going through, you know, getting incarcerated, how many are killing themselves, how many have substance abuse problems. You know, these aren't my words. These are facts. And it's going to continue unless we address step one. You know, I often say to these guys, there is no step two without step one. And as society, we are big on cure options. I think it's just the way we are. And if somebody's going to be homeless, let's find them a bed. If he has a substance abuse problem, let's find him a counselor. That's suicidal, that's, you know, let's lock them down and put them in the psych ward. But we don't help them on step one. We don't help them put a solid foot down on step one so they don't trip up. And then they can head to step two. And then they can head to step three towards a successful life. And I'm not a genius by any stretch of the imagination. I don't have a lot of letters after my name. But this is not rocket science. It's really not. We prepare them. We prepare them for combat. We invested time and effort to make them who they are in the military world, and we do nothing except for maybe a five-day TAPS course, which most of the young 0311, the infantry types, are sleeping or playing on their smartphones. And then we chuck them out in civilian life, and we wonder why they fail. And they do.
Absolutely. You talk about collaboration, and I've been witnessing that for a year now, working with our Four Alliance members. You just recently became a member of our Four Alliance. Could you explain why you feel like it's helping you? Or?
Well, you know, I joined it because I believe in what they're trying to do. To be candid with you, I think it is a challenge in the nonprofit world. And I come from, you know, I come from the military world, and then I come from the corporate world, and I come from the self-employed world. The nonprofit world, as a whole, does not want to collaborate. They do not want to work together. They all have their own missions. They all are very protective of their contacts, of their sources, of their missions, of their processes. And, you know, as Dave Sutherland said many years ago, you know, these veterans, they drown in the sea of goodwill. I mean, they just sink straight to the bottom because there is, you know, 45,000 nonprofits in this country in the veteran world. It's, you know, from some that are effective and some that are just, you know, an absolute waste of time. And so collaboration is a nice buzzword, but to get people to actually collaborate is a challenge, because collaboration means adjustment of your mission, and it might mean changing your mission slightly to be able to fit it into that part of, you know, a collaborative environment. So, you know, I hope that our thought, you know, it becomes successful, because a lot of us small nonprofits really do need to collaborate. If we don't collaborate, then we're just going to be ineffective. I cannot even think how far we've come this year alone if I did not take a collaborative approach to the people that provide the things that would cost me a small fortune to develop. And I'm not going to mention names, but there's organizations out there who've spent hundreds of thousands, millions of dollars developing processes or technical platforms, And then there's, you know, a small company, civilian company, that already has the platform that you can engage for, you know, $250 a month and achieve the same goal. So if we're going to collaborate, we have to be smart. We have to look at what is your role, what is your niche, and work with people. If I have a veteran who is struggling with PTS, who I can build a relationship with, and he happens to say, you know, I used to have a passion for hiking. I don't need to invest money to take him hiking. There's organizations out there who'll be glad to take him hiking.
Exactly.
Surfing. You know, so we really need to take a corporate look at how we collaborate. And we really need to put, you know, some of these egos in check and you know, deliver on what you're trying to achieve and come to terms with the fact that, you know, you can fit as a piece of a big pie and you can be totally fine. And your part is no less valuable than you know, the piece of pie next to you. We have, like I said, we have a lot of people looking at this, you know, this PTS issue and this transition support. But you know, some, you know, doesn't help. They just don't help. And, you know, one of the big problems I see is these, a lot of these camps, which are great, but they can hurt more than they can help. Because if you take somebody out of a challenging environment where they have no job, they have no support structure, they're struggling financially, maybe they're drinking too much, and you take them out somewhere for a week and you get them excited about life and you tell them how great it can be and you give them leadership training or you give them kumbaya sessions and all this, and then you put them back in that bad environment, you really haven't helped. If anything, you maybe have increased their despondency because you gave them a feel and a flavor for what they should rightfully expect out of civilian life. So we've got to engage them, but we've got to engage them 24/7. And it's okay to engage them and let them go on, different events or different courses or different processes, but somebody's got to own the engagement process, and that's I think where our niche is. That we want to kind of hook them, and we want to keep them, and we want to keep them until we know that they are on the road to either secondary education for the right reasons, or that they're in meaningful employment for the right reasons, and you know, so it, you know, and I'll give you a good example. And I know, you know, you're not asking a lot of questions, and I'm talking, but it sounded like that was how you wanted to do it.
That's right.
But you know, for example, you know, we have a VT course, so we have dozens of resume writing classes, dress for success, how to interview. But that demographic, again, being specific to that demographic, they struggle to find jobs. They struggle to find meaningful work. They are fish out of water. The primary reason is, once again, we don't look at step one. Now, a resume is definitely not step one. How to interview is not step one. What to wear is not step one. We have to help these young men and women identify what it is they want to do and why. And if anybody listening asks the average 0311 or 11B when they get out of the military, what do you want to do? I don't know. Well, you know, have you thought about it? Yeah, well, I'm going to go to school. Well, what do you want to go to school for? Well, I don't know. I want to get a degree. Okay, what do you want to get a degree in? Well, you know, I don't know. I was an infantryman. I think I can be a good security guard or I can be a good policeman. That is so insulting to these veterans that we don't help them identify what they're good at, why, their strengths, their weaknesses. So we give them career assessments. And we use Strength Finder, and we give them career assessments so that they can identify what their strengths and weaknesses are. That is so easy. costs $10. But we don't do it. And we don't present it to them in such a way that when we do it, that they understand why they did it. We provide special ops folks resiliency training. It doesn't take a genius to know that that resiliency training could absolutely help them cope with some of the stresses they have in civilian life. Likeability and mindfulness. There is courses that have been done tens of thousands of times in the civilian world to help people be more likable and be more mindful of their environment, whether they're at work or whether they're in school or whether they're at home. Why can't we provide those sort of things to these veterans who have only known high and tight and yes sir, no sir for the past 4 years, 6 years? These are not expensive things to do. And they can be done quickly, and they can be done in an e-learning environment. We just don't do them. Now, we do those things. So go ahead.
Well, where do you operate? In the United States? You mentioned Australia before we went on the air, so... Where do you actually operate? Where, for veterans that are listening right now. Also, there's somebody, I think I recognize a number on our screen. You want to take a call real quick? And then we'll go back to it.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
Okay, hang on. I think I recognize this person.
Hi, it's Diane.
Hello. Oh, hi, Diane. Hi. How are you doing? I thought I recognized your number. We've been talking with Rick.
Rick, thank you, Bob, for taking my call. And Rick, I just really want to acknowledge you for the work that you're doing. And I wanted to call in because I'm a certified performance life coach, and what you are talking about is my passion. I donate my coaching hours to the men and women who have served in the military. Currently, right now, I am working with a young man who is in jail. He served 4 tours, came back, and really had a hard time transitioning to civilian life. So when I started working with him, I asked him, what did you need when you came back? He said, great question, Diana. What I need was support in transitioning back into civilian life. I personally have never been in the military, but I understand pain. I understand what it's like to be tossed to the curb. And I really like the fact that you mentioned that PTS can affect anybody at any time in their life. So when I read about what you're doing, I just had to be on this call because I am here to support the men and women. I've got over 500 paid coaching hours. I work full-time as a life coach, but I donate my coaching hours to the men and women. And my passion is, Rick, is, as I said before, I know what it's like to come back, for these men and women who have come back. Their spouses have spent all their money. They find out that they've moved out. They're lost. It takes us, people. When you say, I support the military, well, this is where I come in. I support you men and women. I get it. Again, I've never been in the military, but I get it. So I just want to put that out there to you that I appreciate what you're doing, and if I can support you in any way, you can contact me through Bob, he knows the work that I do. And, you know, there's a need out there. And what I have found is I've gone to military bases. I've shared what I want to do. They're all like, well, that's great. But then it stops. So what I have found in order to assist the men and women in the military, I've got to go outside of the traditional channels. So what you're doing inspired me is I just applaud you, and I want you to know that I'm here as a support for you, and I really thank you for taking my call.
Well,
thank you, Diana.
I mean, if you think about what Diana said, I mean, the kind of slam on society is that this is. I had somebody tell me, and I'll go for a little tangent, but I had somebody tell me once there is not a business case to put the same kind of effort into supporting this group of veterans that there is other groups of veterans. And I said, well, you know, what do you mean? What do you mean by that? And they said, well, if you think about pilots and avionics techs and logistics and engineers and all these folks, they've been trained on the best equipment known to man. when they get out, there are people lining up to engage those guys, you know, our defense contractors. Well, you know, during the height, in the heyday of the, you know, the conflicts, everybody wanted to engage the trigger pullers, you know, for operators and everything that they needed. Well, that, you know, that dried up real quick. So if you think about a high school educated young man or woman who come from rural Kentucky, barely graduated high school, back in 2003, we're told, great option for you is join the Army, join the Marine Corps, join the Navy, join the Air Force. You know, they really didn't have much choice. And so they do, and they joined. And they joined in their thousands. And just like Roman times, we don't need them anymore. Turn your shield in, bear in, and go back. Go back home. And we'll call you when we need you again. And so we wonder, well, I guess I don't think we wonder. People need to just kind of think, how would they feel if their lives that they had known since high school changed in the blink of an eye? And they had no communication with their friends. They had no accommodation. They had no income. A lot of them have other than honorable discharges, so they have no benefits. Their GI Bill credits have been taken away. So it's like if you wanted to write down on a piece of paper a roadmap towards despondency and suicide, society delivers that for these young men and women on a daily basis.
Exactly.
And it's
so how do people reach you? And again, what country? Because I know you've talked
well,
UK
yeah.
and
Australia. We're in San Diego.
Okay, you're in San Diego.
We do what we do here primarily, but we're working on a national initiative on the PTS front. We are really focused in on the normalizing and civilianizing the PTS in San Diego County. Obviously, we have a goal to take this national. The VET course, we want to provide it as far afield as we can. In Australia, we have a Vet 360 Australia, and the focus there is getting homeless veterans off the streets, quite simply because they have such a smaller percentage than we have over here that we feel we can get them off the streets. And the process to get them off the streets is the process that we want to do here to prevent them going on the streets. So over there, they engage, they put them in a safe environment. They do the, you know, everything from the career assessment and resiliency training. They will help them with substance abuse counseling if need be. They will help them with PTS counseling. That is a cure option that we can actually achieve that mission. The mission over here to get them all off the streets over here is just too big for us, and there's about, you know, 20,000 people trying to do it. Over here, we want to prevent them from hitting the streets or hitting the courts. And it doesn't take a lot. We don't need 20 years. We don't need tens of billions of dollars. We don't need national marches. We can do this, and we can do it quickly. And all it takes is education, basic education, civilians, law enforcement. I have a story about a veteran who, shut himself up in his house and said he was going to kill himself, and then they got him out and they helped him, and he went to the psych ward, and then the next time he did it, the SWAT team turned up because somebody said, oh, he's a veteran and he has a weapon. That young man killed himself. And I question that. What would have happened if maybe a peer counselor that he had a relationship with came? What if a fellow buddy from his unit in Afghanistan came? What if somebody that he trusted came instead of 10 armed men in black outfits carrying automatic weapons? But people, PTS and mental health is the bastard stepchild we don't want to talk about. And we lost one of our Marines, one of our 2-4 Marines just last week. And everybody's in a state of shock. Everybody's totally surprised. He's seen this, he's seen that. Well, it's because he sucked it up and he didn't want to talk about it, and he put a brave face on it, and he did it as long as he could, and he finally couldn't do it any longer. So, you know, it's sad because it's fixable, but I don't think our government, I don't think our military is prepared to fix it. The costs on the back end are monumental. The cost of fixing it on the front end are minuscule. And I had a congressman ask me, well, what would you do? If you could click your fingers and fix it tomorrow, what would you do? And I told him, I said, give them to me or somebody like me for the last month of their military career. You've had them for 2 years, 4 years, 6 years, 8 years, 20 years, doesn't matter. Give them to somebody like me for the last month of their career and kick the gunnies out and kick the officers out and kick the pilots out and kick the avionics techs out and give me the high school educated, short-term military service, combat veterans, and let's prepare them for civilian life. And I guarantee we will knock this level of despondency and suicide on the head if they just do that. But we know they're not going to do that. They want them as long as they've got them. They want them doing what they do for the up to the last minute they walk out of that gate.
Yep.
And, you know, so it's just it's a shame, really, because we've got all these people out there shouting about 22 kill themselves a day. Well, I mean, it's not helping. using emotional manipulation. That's hurting the guys. That's hurting the ones out there who may be thinking about killing themselves. Because, you know, it doesn't take a genius to go, okay, well, so, yeah, they're talking about 22 kill themselves a day. Well, you're a young man in that, or a woman in that level of despondency. What goes through your mind? Well, if it's 22, then it's not a big deal if it's 23. And if those people are killing themselves, then, you know, what chance have I got? So we just have to be smarter about the stigma around PTS. We just have to not call them and not insinuate that they're nutcases and that they're angry and that they're all alcoholics and they're all divorced and they've all beaten their wives and they don't play with their kids, because that's absolutely not the case. And we just filmed a show up in L.A. called Breaking Silence, and the first episode was with the Bastards of Ramadi, which is two former Marines. We had four combat Marines and a combat Navy corpsman. And after we filmed for 3 hours and 10 minutes, I kind of sat down and I went, oh, my God. I mean, it's amazing. All of these young men were combat vets. They all came across as highly intelligent. They all came across as articulate. Four have master's degrees. Four have Purple Hearts. Four of the five are married. Three of the five have jobs. The other two are in school. One's in school. The other one has his own company. These are the first thing, but every one of them has struggled or is struggling with PTS. And I hope people can see that, and I hope people can see victims of domestic violence and police and fire, everybody, have to talk about their struggles with PTS in such a way that they can understand that these are not crazy, angry people. They're just struggling to cope with something that,
right,
we would all struggle with.
Exactly.
So
how do people reach you? People listening right now, what would you tell them? Go to your website and give your website address?
Social media?
We're
not hard to find. If you go to carrythechallenge.org, we're on there. If you type Breaking Silence, you'd be typing Vet360, Veterans360. You know, we can be found. The challenge we have is very much like that person who said there isn't a business case. A lot of these large companies, these large defense contractors and these large organizations, and they don't want to take on this demographic. It's the toughest demographic. And we need people to help take on this issue, and we don't need a lot of money. We need a collaborative team, which we've got. We've got some amazing folks that are helping. Because if we open this can of worms, we better have a support structure for them. when they decide to put their hands up. Because what we're asking them to do is to be open and honest about what they're going through. And there is nothing more devastating for somebody to be open and honest about what they're going through and then to be dumped down the crack between, big nonprofits and the government, because we will fail in our support for them. So, we need help. We need people out there who understand. We need people out there who have been through PTS. We need people who have coped with PTS. We need people who want to be peers. They want to be people who can relate. That's one of the things Ty Carter said to me. I said, I tell my lads that I understand where they've been. Well, Ty Carter, nearly ripped my head off. He said, no, we can't understand. We can only relate, because every person is different. And every person's response, if 100 people went through exactly the same thing, there would be 100 different responses. So we can't have a one-size-fits-all. And I have a Green Beret who listens to John Denver when he goes to bed. And that's his thing. It makes him calm. I have a Navy SEAL who jumps out of an airplane when he gets to the point where he is so stressed and so overwhelmed, he will jump out of an airplane, and when his chute opens, he says it flows out of him. And depending upon his stresses in life, he'll jump once a week or he'll jump once a quarter. It doesn't matter. That's his release. So we don't need to drug him. We can put them on horses. We can put them on surfboards. We can put them in coffee shops. They just need somebody to talk to. They need somebody who understands.
Right.
I'm doing it again. Understands. We need somebody who can relate to where they've been. And it doesn't have to be a combat veteran relating to a combat veteran. Why can't a combat veteran talk to a police officer? Isn't a police officer's job stressful 24/7? They've maybe been on the job for 12 years. What about a fireman? What about a fireman who carried a dead child out of a burning house? Why can't that fireman talk to a combat veteran about his feelings of seeing a body in the street of Grimaldi or losing a friend in combat? But we have a police officer now that we're engaged with who was involved in a major shootout, and PTS cost him his career. We have a fireman who for a freak accident had the lower half of his face torn off, and how he was an Iron Man and a fire captain, and he lost his career because of PTS. And these are all people who are trying to come to terms with trauma after stress. I mean, stress after trauma. How they dealt with the trauma. And those people, but for the grace of God, could have killed themselves very easily. 300 policemen kill themselves every year. Firemen kill themselves every year. We had a nurse jump off the Coronado Bridge here in San Diego because she couldn't fix an Army guy who was a soldier who was hitting an IED because she couldn't talk to anybody about it. This is fixable. It's all communications. We have doctors who don't understand PTS. I'm struggling with combat trauma, doc. Page 4, nightmares. Give them this prescription. And then you hook them on that prescription, and maybe they mess up and you take that prescription away. What are their choices? They go and self-medicate. When I spoke out in Australia, we talked about the workload at the VA. Do you really honestly believe that you can help somebody cope with post-traumatic stress if you see them for 20 minutes once every 45 days and you can't relate to where they've been? Will that veteran really want to go back? But what if that veteran was talking to somebody who could relate to him once a week in a coffee shop, and every Thursday morning they got together, or they had a surf clinic? They have a surf clinic out here. It's amazing. What if they went off-roading? What if they went hiking together? What if they served? What if they talked to people about it? The best therapy I have seen and the best support is for these young veterans to talk to other veterans about what they're struggling with. And you keep the shitbirds out of the way, and you let these guys talk to people who they can relate to about their struggles. and it flows out of them. And that's what we did with our Breaking Silence episode in L.A. Yeah, so this is, you know, I'm basically spewing out, you know, what I've learned over 4 years of being on the front lines of this. And, you know, kind of, you know, I don't know if you have specific questions, but, you know, in closing,
well,
I would
we're
say
running,
that
we're
this
actually,
is...
Yeah, yeah, we're actually running out of time.
Good. Okay.
Sorry about
that.
I have certain...
Bottom line, yeah, I do want to say just in closing, you know, this is fixable. It's fixable. We don't need scientists. We don't need hundreds of millions of dollars. We don't need 10 years. This is fixable.
Right.
And we just got to collaborate. We've got to bring all the pieces together. We've got to make them feel comfortable and open and honest about what they're struggling with, whether it's transition or PTS, doesn't matter. And we've got to talk to them in their language, and we've got to understand, we've got to go back to their previous life before military service. And we can do this if people will just make a commitment to change this dynamic. And then maybe next year we talk that maybe we only lose 2 a day instead of 22.
Well, I appreciate you sharing all that you have, Rick. It's very, very good to hear what you're saying. From where I'm sitting, programs with men and women like you, there are so many veterans, so many people that are out there right now reaching out like you're talking about. And I really think that's helping a lot. And we just need to do more of it. Like you said, more people
mm-hmm.
need to be out there and helping. So I appreciate you sharing all this. Before we go off the air, I don't want to just have it cut us off on Blood Club Radio here. Would you like to give a shout out to our men and women who are still serving?
Yeah, I would, probably in a different way than you used to. If you're still serving and you're listening and you're struggling, go talk to somebody. I don't care if it's a chaplain or if it's your boss and you're struggling. Don't self-medicate, don't take drugs, don't beat up on the wife, don't get angry, go talk to somebody, and don't just take the norm of suck it up and be quiet and get on with it, because this is a serious issue for you, and people need to start hearing from our combat veterans while they're active duty, not 6 months after they've left the service. So talk to somebody. Talk to anybody. Just talk to somebody.
Great. Well, thank you so much, Rick, for sharing all this with us, with our listeners. And hopefully we'll be able to do this again with you and learn more. I appreciate you being on the program tonight, and thank you for everything you're doing.
All right, Bob. Well, I appreciate it. We could do a 3-hour show on this in a heartbeat, but I appreciate you letting me flap my gums for an hour.
Absolutely. I'm glad to do it. It's an honor. Thank you very much.
Okay.
That was a little beep telling me we're running out of time. Okay, thank you, Rick. Rick.
Cheers.
Right, Rick.
All right, Bob.
Cheers.
Bye-bye.
Folks, we've been talking with Rick Collins with www.carrythechallenge.org and www.veterans360.org. On Twitter, you'll find him on Vets360. On Facebook, Veterans360. And so I want to thank you all for listening. Please share the program with everybody you can. And before we go off the air, I do want to give a shout-out also to our men and women, first of all, who have served. We just passed Veterans Day again. To all of our men and women who have served, and your families, thank you for your service. And to those of you who are in active duty and maybe you're in an area where you could be in harm's way, be safe, stay alert. We look forward to you coming home soon. And God bless you. God bless America.